podcast.
We're on Sadakima Woman Bay. Sadakima Woman Bay is at the bottom by the Mishnah. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, so we've been talking the last couple of Mishnahs about Smicha and Korbanah. So now, and we've been talking about Smicha, and earlier in our Masechta, we talked about Snufa, about the certain Korbanah has to be raised. So the Mishnah says, Chomer b'smicha m'smicha, or b'smicha m'smicha. There's a certain Chomer in Smicha over Snufa. We have cases where Smicha applies, or not where Smicha applies, but where a certain detail applies to Smicha, but does not apply to Snufa. Or b'smicha m'smicha. Snufa is waving it like a bull. Or b'smicha m'smicha, and on the other hand, we have certain cases where there's a Chomer in Snufa over Smicha. So, where do we have a Chomer? On the one hand, she'echad meinif b'chol ha'chaverim, we have a chumrah when it comes to smicha, she'echad meinif b'chol ha'chaverim, if you have a bunch of people together jointly bring a korban, and it's the kind that needs tznufa, then one person can do the tznufa on behalf of all of them. Ve'einechad tznufa b'chol ha'chaverim, but when it comes to smicha, you can't have one doing it on behalf of all the other ones. Actually, the Mishnah didn't specify really whether that's a kula or a chumra in one over the other, because we had the discussion yesterday, what does it mean that when you have a bunch of people have a korban, does it mean that all of them in fact have to be tzomech, or does it mean, we had a machloka tanoim, whether echad tzomech halide kulon or not, and then we had a further machloka in that, two different places, where Rashi explains here versus in Smurda, whether it means that the Chachamim would say all of them have to be Tzomech and Rabbi Huda says only one, or whether the Chachamim would say only one and Rabbi Huda says none.
So maybe for that, carbon, right?
On one carbon we're talking about. So maybe for that reason the Mishnah doesn't specify that that's a Chomer particularly in Smicha over Tznufa, because it depends how you're going to understand it. But on the other hand, Chomer b'Tznufa, we definitely have a Chomer in Tznufa over Smicha, Shat Tznufa neheges b'Korbanos ha-Yachad b'Korbanos ha-Tzimur, because Tznufa takes place with Korbanos Yachid, namely a Shlomim, that's Chazan Shoka waved, and a Toda as well, and with Korbanos HaTzibur, it also takes place with Korbanos HaTzibur, namely the Kvasim that are gored as a Shlomim on Shavuot, B'chaim of a Shlomim. Yeah, those are the only ones, but still, the fact is, we do have B'chaim... Yeah, also the Omer, also the Korbanos. Okay, so then, yeah. So, but as far as animal Korbanos, the only one is the kids that said us, but yeah. Shtei Alechem and Naomi. B'chaim of a Shchutin, also Tznufa takes place with living animals or with shechted ones. We had earlier that you have certain korbanos where Tznufa is done when the animal is alive and after it's shechted. Yeah, they pick it up and wave it. They wave it in all directions, like a wolf. Over Shchutin, and you have other ones where it takes place when it's shechted. Over Dabba Sheyesh by Ruach Chaim, over Dabba Sheyin by Ruach Chaim. And Tznufa takes place with things that are or were alive, meaning animals, as well as things that never were alive in the first place, mute yourself if you don't mind, thanks. Okay. Over Javish, yes. Okay. Not so much a Chumra, but the fact is you have more applicability of Tznufa. Tznufa takes place in a much wider variety of Korbanos. Yochid and Tibur, whether it's Chaim and Shchotin, Vajavish Yesh by Ruach Chaim, Vajavish Ein by Ruach Chaim, it applies to things. That's what I mean. Chumra, in other words, there's more of a Chumra, in other words, it has to happen in more cases. Things that are alive, meaning animals, and things that aren't alive, namely menachas, mashenkin v'smicha, as opposed to smicha only takes place when an animal is alive, so therefore it only applies to living creatures, to animals, and only while they're still alive, so it never applies to menachas, and it never applies to animals after they're shechted. And even as far as korbanos tzibur, we only have two of them that require smicha. So therefore, in that sense, Tznufa has more of a chumra over smicha. In other words, it has a greater applicability. There's more often that it takes place. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. How do we know these dinim that we said in the Mishnah, what smicha applies to and what Tznufa applies to? When the pasuk says korban, the pasuk says that the person puts his hands on the head of his korban and checked it. That means the rabbi is called balei korban l'smicha. From that we learned, as we said yesterday, that all balei korban have to be involved in the smicha. So that's what we discussed yesterday. Does it mean that all of them actually have to do smicha, or does it mean that any one of them, does it mean that any one of them can do smicha on behalf of all of them? Now the point is, why do we need a pasuk for that? Because to learn from that, we would think to make a kavah chaymer. Where we have the Torah telling us that it applies in certain cases also to a korban after it's been shafted, because as we discussed, you have the shalmei sibur, the tnufa is done while they're alive and while they're shafted, but okay, you have also a regular person's shlomim is done after it's shafted, you do it with the cause of a shoik. Yes, nismat of a chovin, and yes, there's a miut that, not actually a miut from a pasuk, but we'll say soon. There's a practical reason for a miut that you don't have everybody participating in the tnufa. If you have many people who are bringing a shlomim together, for example, you don't have all of them do tnufa. One of them does tnufa on behalf of all of them. So therefore, as opposed to, again, we just said tnufa, happens with an animal after it's shechted, but on the other hand, you have fewer people are involved in it. So then smicha shalom israb for the shechted, smicha, where you don't have the concept of doing smicha on an animal after it's shechted, ain't a din shetismai pechogrim. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer then that we apply the same kind of miut as far as smicha? And say therefore that if you have a korban that's being brought by many partners, only one of them should be doing smicha. So therefore, in order to, because the thing, we would make a kava chaymer from tnufa. Where by tnufa you have only one person doing the tnufa, but yet you have, but yet tnufa takes place by shchutim as well. So you would think to argue that in that case, smicha is even less than tnufa because it only happens by a live animal, not after it's shechted. How much more so then that also you should have that fewer people should be doing it. Therefore, Talmud Lomar, korbanai, therefore no, the pasuk says korbanai, l'nabit, for balei korban l'smicha to tell us that all the balei korban have to be involved in the smicha. So we need that pasuk because otherwise we would have made a kavah chomer. But now the pasuk korbanu teaches us that no, everybody who participates in the korban is involved in the smith. Again, does it mean that everybody has to do it? Or does it mean that one does it on behalf of all of them? That's another discussion. But the point is, all of them have to be involved.
If there's one who does it, how is everybody involved?
Because any one of them could be doing it on behalf, and he has to be doing it on behalf of all of them. Okay.
So they still just wanted to.
Fine, but nevertheless, we would still say that he's doing it on behalf of all of them. What I was called balei korban, in the sense that all the balei korban have to be involved. Again, in our sugya yesterday, Rashi had in fact said that. I mean, echad stomach al yidei kulam. We said yesterday that we would explain Rabbi Yehuda that way when we would explain the Chachamim to say that all of them have to be doing it. Okay, so,
it's not the same.
Okay, so therefore it's not the same as Tinofa where one and only one is doing it. Actually,
goes more by the
Chachamim. We're talking according to the Chachamim. Tosfos asked the question, Taka, then maybe we should use this Kavah Chomer to say that there should be smicha on an animal after it's shechted, and Tosfos leaves the question unresolved. So very simply, where do we know the whole concept of smicha from? Because the pasuk is the stomach, and then it says b'shrachat. So therefore, that implies that smicha always takes place before the shchita. We said yesterday, take this with smicha, shchita. So by the same logic, there's no such thing as smicha after shchita. So then the question is, okay, then maybe we should say that indeed, if you have many people sharing in a korban, then maybe all of them should be doing tnufa together, and use a kavah chomer. Now that we established that smicha does not take place, now that we said that smicha does take place by all the people, the mat smicha shalom nisrab to b'shchutin, nisrab to b'chogrin, madach smicha, where you don't have smicha take place after the animal is shechted, only before, nisrab to b'chogrin, but we just said on the basis of the pasuk korbanos, that if you have many people joining together in a korban, then they all do smicha on it. So then you should make a kabel chaimer. Snufa shenitzrab to the shulchan. Snufa, where you have that snufa takes place sometimes even after the animal is shechted, ain a din shenitzrab to the chayvin. Then how much more so that you should have that all the people who are involved with the korban should be doing snufa with it. And if we said that, then there we would go. We would say that, not like our Mishnah says, that Echad Meinif V'chol HaChaverim, we would say that. Okay. Now that we establish that with Smicha, everybody who shares in the Korban has to do Smicha on it. So then we should make a Kabbal Chaimer. Smicha takes place only when the animal is alive. But before Shechita, unlike Shinufa, which can take place sometimes before and sometimes after and sometimes both, and yet Smicha, but Smicha was saying that all the people do it, so how much more so Shinufa should be done by all of them? Because Shinufa, takes place more often than Smicha. So Shinufa takes place when the animal is alive and after it's shechted. Yeah, before and after. Yeah. That's the question. No, but that's what do you mean? It's more likely. It's a kabbal chaimer. We should argue. The answer is mishum delay epsher. The reason why not is not the reason why not everybody does the snufa is not specifically based on a mirror from a positive, but because it's impossible, practically speaking, to have that all of them should do snufa. Hechi leved, because how should you do it? Linfu kula bahadi adadi. Should they all be standing there together and doing snufa together? Can't. Kahavya chatitza. There's going to be a chatitza over there because one person's hands are going to be below the other one, and therefore not all of them are going to be equally holding the korban. Now, Tosfos points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta that we said the kohen puts his hand under the hands of the owners when they do the tenufa, so don't you have a problem with chatitza there? So Tosfos actually over there explained what it meant is the kohen puts his hand, what it meant is that the kohen and the owners are holding it in different places. The owner is holding it higher up and the kohen lower down. In other words, on the surface of the basket, the owner is, let's say, holding it up here, and the kohen is holding it down here. But therefore, there's no chassidus.
The bottom of the bowl there.
That's according to Tosfos. What it means is, hold on. According to Tosfos over there, tachas yada bailam doesn't mean that you have the owner's hands and then cupped underneath them or the kohen's hands, because that would be a chassidus. Rather, it means tachas in the sense the kohen's hands are lower down on the basket, and the owner's hands are higher up on the basket. But here, we're with the different owners, you couldn't do that. So therefore, you'd end up with a chatitza. Linif, v'hodu v'linif, should we say, okay, so we have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, let's say, have chipped in to buy a korban. Fine, so let's say, forget about chatitza. Reuven will do the tenufa first, then Shimon, then Levi. Can't. Tenufa amarachmona v'loi tenufois. Because the pasuk says that you should do tenufa, which implies one tenufa. So therefore, you need only one and only one. So therefore, you can't have tenufois in the plural. Now, what about smicha? Rashi points out that with smicha, the Torah never actually uses the noun smicha. It uses the verb, the samach et yodai. So therefore, there's nothing in that that specifically means one, that specifically means you can only have one smicha. So you could have, if there's room enough for all of them to be doing smicha side by side, they can do that. If they have to do that, first Reuven is going to do it, and then Shimon, and then Levi, fine, because there's no limit to the number of smichas in the Torah, but snufa, it specifically says snufa. So therefore, yes, we could have made a kabbal chaimer to say that all of them should do shnufa, but practically speaking, you can't make it work, because you either have the problem of chatitza, or you have the problem that there's multiple shnufa. Okay. So now the question is, okay, so we established in our Mishnah, and in the discussion now from the Braisa, we said that smicha, by definition, takes place only when the animal is alive. Unlike snufa, where again, we had korbanos, for example, the kvotim that come with the shtei lechem, where snufa is done when they're alive, and again after they're shechted, and you have other korbanos where it's done while they're alive, and other ones where it's done only, where it's done with the pieces and then after they're shechted, the chaz of the shreif, but we said that smicha is always done when the animal is alive. So the question is smicha b'shchutin lesser? Are you telling me there's no such thing as smicha on the pieces of an animal after it's shechted? But we learn in a Mishnah in Talmud not like that. The Mishnah describes, now you have to keep in mind, for purposes of this Mishnah, on the one hand, the Kohen Gadol is able to do the avodah whenever he wants. You have this 24 mishmaros of Kohenim, and each mishmar serves for 1 week in the Beis Hamikdash. They have exclusive rights, unless you have a Kohen from another mishmar as a Korban to bring, as we talked about in various Gemaras, and Yom Tovim, The Kohen Gadol is an exception to that. The Kohen Gadol can jump in anytime he wants and do the avodah. Practically speaking, he didn't necessarily do it on a regular basis, but he could. So the Mishnah describes there in Talmud how they did things a little bit differently when the Kohen Gadol decides he wants to do some part of the avodah. So the Mishnah says this: Man Kohen Gadol goes to Lahakir. If the Kohen Gadol wants to burn the pieces of the korban, specifically it's talking about the Talmud. If the Kohen Gadol specifically wants to burn the pieces of the Talmud on the Mizeach, so how do we do it? So the normal procedure would be that you have a bunch of Kohenim who were picked in a girdle. You had one Kohen who's going to shecht it, another one who's going to sprinkle the blood, etc. And then you had a line of Kohenim where they're lining up with holding the pieces of the korban. The first one holds the head and the leg. The next one holds some other pieces, etc. And then what they do is they put them all on the kevesh. They go do some other things, and then they go do some other avodas, davening and whatever, and then they return later on, and they take those pieces from them, and you have a machlokas in Yuma, actually, did they make another girdle for other kohenim to take those pieces from the kevesh and throw them into the fire, or is it the same ones who had who each one had the job of bringing these particular ones to the kevesh, would be the same one now who takes them from the kevesh and throws them into the fire? No, it's not his own. No, because the idea is, this way, the Gemara mentions, I think it's in Yuma, that this way, like, you're making more of an excitement in the Azara, like you're making a whole to-do out of the Avoda, you're not just finishing it, and let's get it over with. So, yeah. Anyway, the point is, so now when the Kohen Gadol gets involved, so you're over the Kevesh, so now the Kohen Gadol goes up the ramp of the Mizeach, that's Gan Bimino, the Gan, the deputy Kohen Gadol, walks to his right side, the He'elohu, and helps him, and helps him go up the Kevesh. So now, the first Kohen in the line, again, it's from one Mandomer, it's the first one who won the last girdle, and according to the other, I think Rabbi Lozman Yaakov, says it's the original Kohen who brought those pieces to the Kevesh, whatever it is, he hands him the Rosh and the Regal, the head and the front leg of the animal. And here's the key thing, the Mishnah says, the Kohen Gadol would do smicha on the pieces, v'zorkan, and then he'd throw them into the fire. Then the second Kohen comes, hands the first Kohen in the line, the two front, after the shita, obviously, because they're throwing up pieces, yeah. Sorry, Regal with the back leg. So then the second one, then the second one hands to the first Kohen the two front legs of the animal, because that was the second thing that was brought in line after the animal was cut up. Again, no still a Kohen Gadol. The first one passes them to the Kohen Gadol. Same Chalei and the Zorkan. He does smicha on them and throws them into the fire. Nishmat Hasheni v'Holachlai. And then the second one slips away and goes his way. V'chachalei Meshichin Leishakalei Vorim. And so it continues. The third Kohen hands the pieces that he brought to the first one, who hands them to the Kohen Gadol, who does smicha on them and throws them into the fire. Same Chalei and the Zorkan. And each one, the Kohen Gadol does smicha on them and throws them in the fire. Or with man shu roita, or if the Kohen Gadol wants to do differently, if he wants, he can just do smicha on them and others, meaning the other Kohenim, can throw them into the fire. The bottom line being that we see that the Kohen Gadol does smicha on the pieces of the korban after it's shattered. So what are you telling me in our Mishnah and in the Braita that you only have smicha when the animal's alive? No, when Abaya Hossam Mishum quoted the Kohen Gadol. Abaya says no, the reason there is a special thing for the sake of the honor of the Kohen Gadol. So what does that mean? Miyuchas Sarashi on the top says that this way it makes it appear as though he was actually makriv all of them. So there's no such thing as smicha on the pieces min aserda. But here, to honor the Kohen Gadol, to make it look like he's the one who is doing the whole korban, then we give him that honor of having him be smicha on them. Pressing on the pieces, yes. Rashi Kavya explains it a little differently, that this way his burning of the pieces is different than everybody else's. He's doing it in a distinctive way to show honor to him that he's the Kohen Gadol and he gets to do things differently. But yes, normally there's no such thing as smicha after an animal is shechted, and that's what our Mishnah said, and that's what the Braita said. It doesn't mean the Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to, just there's no concept of it, but they could decide to honor the Kohen Gadol. Okay. It's not that it has to be, it's not that you're not allowed to, obviously they couldn't.
It's not a sin, it has anything to do with Kafara.
No, it's just in order to honor the Kohen Gadol. Okay. Hadron Alok Shevin. Okay. With this Perek, we get back to two things. First of all, we get back to Menachos, where we've digressed from them for a few days to talk about Smicha and other things. And second of all, we finally get back to there's only one Rashi again. There's not Miyuchas the Rashi and Rashi Staviyad anymore. Okay. We come up to regular Rashi now, and therefore you can see it now it's printed. Now it's printed in normal size type again. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Shtei Halacha, and by the way, also to mention, in Mishnayot, at this point would be where we had the Perek that we had previously about the Omer, which in a way, that Seder makes more sense. After you talk about these various other things, you talk about the Omer, then you talk about the Shtei Halacha and the Lacha Maponim, whereas in the Gemara, why we have it several Perekim earlier, hard to understand. Okay, anyway. Fine. Mishnah says, the Shtei Halachem, now we know you have the two of them, that's the definition of Shtei Halachem, they have to be kneaded individually, as we'll see in the Gemara why, the Nefes Achas Achas, and they were baked individually. So it wasn't that you kneaded one big thing of dough containing the two and then divided it in half and baked it. Niloshes Achas Achas means one by one, means each one individually. Because it's two different things, Niloshes and Nefes, because those are two different things. They have to be kneaded separately, and they have to be baked separately. As we'll see in the Gemara, why? Lechem Aponim, Niloshes Achas Achas, Nefes Shtayim Shtayim. The Lechem Aponim, on the other hand, also have to be kneaded individually, each two are thrown in separately, but they're baked two at a time. You actually have Achronim discuss possibilities when we say about the Shtei Halachem, Nefes, Achas, Achas, does it mean they have to be baked individually, or does it mean you could bake them individually, but you could bake them both together in the oven at the same time? The Lachem Aponim, they have a discussion on what does it mean that you're baking them two at a time, before you need all 12 of them to be in the oven to be Kaddish at the same time. And you actually have Achronim, I think, one of the Achronim, Karen Ora, I think, or somebody wants to say that maybe Nefes, Shtayim, Shtayim means you could bake them means that you put them into the oven two at a time, but when you're actually baking them, he learns that you would have to have all 24 of them, all 12 of them rather, in the oven at the same time for the oven to be Mekadosh then. On the other hand, you have other Achronim that Chazon Ish talks about, but no, because we're going to learn in the Gemara that we have a source that you bake them two at a time, then that means there's a culture that in that case they're able to be Mekadosh two at a time, even though normally you need a whole mincha to be Mekadosh together. Okay. Anyway. Over to Fusaya Oysai, son, the Mishnah continues. They made the Lachem Aponim using a mold, using a form, because we're going to learn on Omer Beis, and we're going to learn as we go through the Perek, that the Lachem Aponim had a unique shape. So they had to make them inside a mold, so it'll have the proper shape.
They stood up like this?
Well, we're going to discuss what the shape was like. So that's that, they made them in a mold. And then when they took them out of the oven, then they would put them into another mold, so they don't get ruined, because you don't want them to break, because they can be very fragile. Tosfos discusses the interesting question about when we say that they had this mold, does it mean, now again, we're going to be talking about on Omer Beis, and we're going to talk about later on in the parak, that the Lachem Aponim were made in such a way you had, there was bread and there was a hollow space inside them. We're going to discuss exactly how they were shaped, but whatever it was, however you learn how the shape was, there was a hollow space inside. So what do we mean this twist, Tosha says? Does it mean that they had a form, let's say, imagine this box was empty, to put the dough inside it, and then afterwards, when it was done, you put the finished bread inside a similar shaped box, or is it the other way around? That maybe what it is you had the boxes inside the dough, you wrap the dough around the box to give it its shape.
Was
the dough inside the box, or was the dough box inside the dough, right?
How
would you think? But then the point is, you'd have to kind of unfold it. You'd have to kind of unfold it in order to take out the
bread. What was the box made of?
So actually, okay. What? So what was the box made out of? Okay. So actually, you bring up an interesting point. The one that was kneaded in, I think all the one that was kneaded in that the dough was shaped in, I think all the Rishonim say was made out of gold. The one that they we're going to learn in the Gemara, there was actually a third one inside the oven. That was, okay, so one second. Our Mishnah is only mentioning two. One that they kneaded it in and shaped it in, and another one that they put it in after it was baked. I'm pretty sure all of the Rishonim learned that both of those were made out of gold. The one in the oven, you have a machloitis, whether that one was also made out of gold on the grounds that Myron Makodesh will admit it, or maybe it was made out of iron so that it can withstand the heat of the Yeah, gold. I mean, gold has a high melting point, but on the other hand, it would also, you know, you want something that'll hold it strongly in the oven. So, okay. All right. Fine. So more sources. Menohani Mu. Where do we know this, that you have this distinction? Again, Shtei Lechem are baked one at a time, and the Lechem Afanim are baked two at a time. So turn it up on them. So like this, we learn in a Blaisa, when it describes the Lechem Afanim, the Pasuk says, Shnei Esronim Yiyah Chalah Ha'efas, each Chalah, the 12 Chalahs of the Shtei Lechem, should be made of two Esronim of flour. That means, Malamah, Chin Loshes, Achat Achat. By having the word Ha'achas in there, means that you have to have, each one has to be kneaded individually. Because that's a challah ha'echos. Otherwise, it's just that shnei esronim yeah, a challah. And of course, each challah, a challah means one. Minayin sh'ach shtei alechem kach. How do we know the same rule applies to the shtei alechem? Tamavayim, v'sam ta'oitam. Therefore, the next pasuk continues. You should place them. Which means, Rashi says, what's the first placement that you do after you make them? What's the first thing you do? You place them into the oven to bake. I skipped the line, sorry. Minayin sh'ach shtei alechem kach. Therefore, you have the word yia, shnei esronim yia, achala ha'echas. So the extra yia teaches us that not just the shtelach, not just the lachmas ponim, have to be kneaded individually, but also the shtelach. Again, ha'achas means each one individually, and yia means not only the lachmas ponim, but also the shtelach. Then, how do we know when it comes to lachmas ponim, they have to be baked two at a time? Therefore, the pasuk continues, you should place them. So again, the first thing after you knead them and shape them, what do? You place them in the oven to bake. So v'samta oisam implies that you should place them, mean two at a time. Yochol af shtei alechem kein, you would think then the same thing applies to the shtei alechem. No, tamad leimah oisam. No, therefore the pasuk is oisam, them, which is a miut. Only them be put two at a time. But oisam means only them. Only lacham afanim, but not the shtei alechem. Question is, what do you mean? Ha oisam, ha pifteh. You just use the word v'samta oisam to say that you have to bake them two at a time. So how are you also using that word oisam for a miut? The answer is in Kane Lemakrova Sam Tom. Okay, but if the Torah only wanted to tell us that you should bake them two at a time, then it could have said it in one word, the Sam Tom. You should place them. No, the Sam Tom, you find in the Torah also. The Sam Tom of the Sam Tom whatever. No, that's the Sam Tem, the Sam Tem, the Sam Tem. Okay, so it could have said the Sam Tom, but or don't you have a lotion, for example, yes. Why instead does it use the word the Santa Oysam? Shamat me not happening, it's healthy. From that you can learn both things. Number one, that the Shtei Lechem have to be baked two at a time. And number two, that the Shtei Lechem only, but not the Lechem Afanim, sorry, have to be baked two at a time, but not the Shtei Lechem. So we're able to learn both things from this word, Besamta Oysam. One, because it has to say it Bechlal, because otherwise it could have just said Besamta. And number two, because it could have said Besamtom. So by the fact that it says Besamta Oysam allows us to learn that on the one hand, it means you're placing them two at a time in the oven, but on the other hand, only them, but not the Shtei Lechem. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting detail, which is the word lechem, the first Tosfos in the parak, points out the word lechem is one of those words that can be lashon zachar and lashon nekeva. Here we have, and we've had throughout the sector, shtei halechem, which is lashon nekeva. On the other hand, we've had earlier in our sector lechem gadol. We have other pesukim that use lechem and lashon zachar. That's one of those words that. We usually say shtei alechem, indeed. But we have other places where we find that lechem is used in lashon zachar. Sometimes you have lashon nekeva words take a lashon zachar plural and vice versa. Plural doesn't mean anything. You have many. The singular is, but yeah.
Why the plural can be
nekeva? I don't know. That's a good question in itself, but I don't know. But you have such words, for example, in Parshas Vayishlach. You have right in the same pasuk. Yaakov says in Yovei Esav, "Ala machna ha'achat v'hikahu." So you have ha'achat is lashon nekeva, and v'hikahu is lashon zachar. So yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah. Okay. Tanarabana, we learn in a brisa. The pasuk says the santa oisam, that you should place them. That means, besides what we just described, that it means that you're putting them in the oven two at a time. Also, it means bitfus. It also means you're placing them into a tfus. You're placing them into a mold. You're placing them into a mold to make sure that they're shaped properly. And Tosfos points out
both into one mold.
No. You're placing each one individually. Yeah. And Tosfos says the word is, if it just meant to put them in the, if it just meant, as we were saying before, to put them in the oven, then it would use the word vnasata. The santa implies placing them in a mold. So therefore, now from the word vnasata, vnasata would have just meant to put them in the oven. The santa means that you're actually placing them inside something, namely a mold. Okay. So actually, the Braisa says shloshet putim hem. So there are actually three molds. Now, our Mishnah mentioned only two. That's number one, nosel et fus vadayin hi basik. You put it in mold number one. At that point, it's still dough. And then in that mold is how you shape it into the proper shape. Number two, uchmin fus hayalavatamer. Number two, there was a mold-shaped thing for it in the oven. So this way they fire up the oven, and this way it would bake inside the mold there. The Gemara later on explains that mold had a hole in it in order that the heat of the fire will be able to effectively bake it. And number three, uchshu roida, and then number three, when he takes it out of the oven, no, but first then he puts it in yet another mold, traditional like the scalpel, in order that it doesn't get ruined, in order that it doesn't break, or otherwise get deformed. The question is, the Gemara says, well, how do you look for the camera? Why do you need a third mold for that? Just put it back into the original mold. The answer is, kivin de ofila, because when you bake it nachta, then it swells up. So therefore, you need a bigger foot. It gets bigger. So therefore, you need a bigger foot than the original one. And in fact, Rabbi Negoshim, in fact, understands that for that reason, the one inside the oven also was a little bit larger than the first one that they needed inside, because when you're baking it, it's going to get a little bit larger in volume. Therefore, you need so that's Tosfos mentioned the point that maybe you should say maybe this is a proof that the bread was inside that the bread was outside the mold, because it was inside the mold, and let's assume the second mold in the oven was the same size as the first one. Then how is it getting any bigger? The mold would prevent it from getting any bigger. No, however the mold was formed. So that's what leads Tosfos to say that maybe the mold was inside the bread rather than outside it. But Rabbeinu Gershon deals with that by saying that just means the one inside the oven was made a little bit larger than the original one, precisely because we know it's going to enlarge a little bit in baking, and you want to leave room for that.
The only people would say it goes inside, because the market has some outside mold to put it in also.
According to what Tosfos is saying, you might have that these various molds were meant to go inside it rather than outside it. This little piece, by the way, that was saying that it swelled up leads to an interesting discussion among Achronim about the whole question. We know that when you're baking matzah for Pesach, if a matzah swells up too much, then you discard it because it's possibly chametz. On the basis of this Gemara, you have some argument that, look, if it swells up a little bit, it's not a big deal. We know that the Lechem Aponim had to remain matzah, and yet our Gemara is clearly saying it swelled up. So they give an answer that there's a difference between a little bit of swelling that a matzah normally does when it bakes versus the kind of extra swelling up, like you have sometimes a matzah that may have started becoming chametz that swells up a large amount. Yes.
One thing also, it's more likely to become chametz in a mold, where there's a lot of dough than in a flat matzah.
Well, that may be also. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Kohenim Zuzim, the Kohenim who are making it have to be Zoriz, and they know to be careful to not allow it to become chametz. They have to be quick about it, that's all. They have to be doing it quickly and make sure. So the fact, by the way, that our Braisa is mentioning three molds, and the Mishnah mentions only two, that leads the Sefer Yisrael has a long explanation about it, where he wants to say that actually the third one that was inside the oven, it wasn't like a baking pan that was something separate from the oven. He wants to learn that it was something built into the oven. And therefore, the Mishnah didn't mention it, because like it's something built in. It's not a separate mold that you put into the oven.
You have to take it out.
No, so therefore, in other words, it would be that if it's built into the oven, then it would be. You take out the bread from it, same as you take out when the bread is sticking to the wall of the oven as usual.
Aside from this version, you have three molds.
Yeah.
One
to knead it inside. One to bake it inside, and one afterwards to keep it from breaking. Ah, that's what we're going to discuss later in the parak, whether the oven were the kli sharis or not.
Because
the last mold, true, but not necessarily the other ones, yeah.
When we bake challah, we don't use three molds, in one mold.
Or challahs are not shaped in such a complicated way as the lachan afanim, that's what that's the next discussion we're going to get into. But you also have to realize, as we go through the discussion, we're going to see the lachan afanim was also fairly thin. So wait, it's fine. So now we have a discussion. Lachan afanim keset oisin oisin. How is the lachan afanim made? How is it shaped? And for here, it'll be useful to have some diagrams. So Yaakov, if you don't mind, you at the end of the day, you can find the last thing over there. You can find the whole school. We're not supposed to be doing it over here. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Okay. So, lachem afanim keitzad. Yeah. Lachem afanim keitzad oisin oisin. How did they make it? What was it shaped on? Rav Chanina Omar Kmenteva Krusa. Rav Chanina says it was like an open box. So this is the kind of thing we usually learn as kids, what the lachem afanim was shaped like. It was flat on the bottom, it had things sticking up from the side, so it was basically...
On all four sides?
No, just on two sides. So it was like an open box.
Yeah.
And then we'll learn later on in the parak, there was a little more complication here, there were chronos, whatever, we'll get to that later. But the basic shape of it, Rav Chanina says, was like an open box. Rav Yechanan Amachmin Sina Reket. Rav Yechanan says it was like a fast ship. The meaning, in other words, according to Rav Yechanan, he had the pictures that it's showing over here. And Rashi, well, first of all, you can see the second diagram in Rashi. Rashi draws it like a V. The Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here. What is Rashi referring to? Is Rashi referring to the bottom of it was like a V? Rashi also described that the sides of it also tapered to a V on one side and another, and on one end and on the other. So literally like a boat, like in these pictures.
Why couldn't it be straight?
According to Rav Yechanan, that's how it was shaped. It means spinner reked. So therefore, in other words, according to, and you have, Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the pros and cons of what Rashi is saying exactly, and various possibilities of what Rashi means, and you actually have Achronim also have further discussion about what Rashi himself means and what Tosfos understands Rashi to be meaning. There's a couple of variations in it, including, for example, one idea of it is that maybe Rashi meant to say that it's shaped like an upside-down pyramid. Because if you think of the shape of a pyramid, square on the bottom, that's because you're seeing it from the side over there, yeah. But so one way of looking at it is Rashi would hold that it actually came to a point at the bottom, and then it tapered up from that point on all four sides to a square top. The Rambam passed things like Rav Chanina, which we'll get to soon. Anyway, so that's another way of explaining Rashi. Another way would be to, Tosfos themselves, on various grounds, disagrees with Rashi, and they learn that actually what it was is, according to Rav Yechanan, that was saying, Sinner Rekedet, what it would be is, it started coming up as a V-shape from the bottom, but then, only to a certain height, after that, you have straight walls going up from there. So therefore, it would be, well, in that sense, more like a ship. So according to Rashi, again, it would be a ship like this, like more like a canoe. And according to Tosfos, it would be more...
back to front?
Well, in other words, pointed on the... In other words, coming to it, it has a keel on the bottom, let's say, and then it comes up diagonally or curved, whatever, from that until the top. According to Tosfos, it would be that it goes diagonally and then up, and then straight up.
Well, you have to make
so like a V with two things with two parallel lines on top of it, right? Okay.
Well, it couldn't be made like a square, right? It would have to be like this.
Okay, so that's again, Rabbi Chanina is saying, Kamin Tevra Prusa, and Rabbi Yechanan says, Kamin Spina Rekedis. So now we're going to go through, and we're going to discuss a number of pros and cons to each one. Okay, so, Vishlein Lamanda Amma Kamin Tevra Prusa. Okay, I can understand according to Rabbi Chanina, that it's shaped like Tevra Prusa, like an open box. Then, Hainu Dehavu Yosli Bazichin. Then that explains where they were able to place the Bazichin. The Bazichin are the two spoons containing Lavona, which sat on the Shulchan during the whole week. They put the Shulchan Aponim and the Bazichin on there on Shabbos, and they took them off the following Shabbos and replaced them. Mm-hmm. Now you have, later on in our parak, we're going to have a machlokas, where during the week the Bazichin sat. Was there room between the two stacks of Lachem Aponim? You have six in one stack, six in the other. According to one mandamer, a mayor, you have a space between them on the shulchan, and the bazichin are placed in that space. According to the Yehuda, on the other hand, there was no room between the two stacks. They were right next to each other, because according to him, the shulchan was a little bit smaller. Yeah, we're going to have later on in the parak, we're going to have a machlokas, what size amma was used to measure the shulchan and the other talim of the Beit Hamikdash. So according to that, then, there was no room between the stacks, and they had to put the position on top of each of the stacks. So if we go like Rav Hanina, that it was Kaminte, Rav Kutza, okay, then we have a place for the position. The inside of each lachan aponim is flat. So good, we put with a one bazich on one bazich on the other. Inside, I'm down inside the challah, on the flat bottom of it, yeah. El alaman de oma can incinerate kedus, but according to Rav Yechanan, that it was like a ship, so therefore, but the problem is, it's not flat inside, it comes to a point on the bottom. So therefore, you don't have, hey, you have a yasu bazich, where are you putting the bazich?
That's when it becomes narrow.
Because, nevertheless, the position has to be flat. You're not going to have them tilting to one side or another. It's not derech eretz before Hashem. So how are you going to place them inside a lechem aponim that comes to a point at the bottom? The position, the pashtas are flat on the bottom.
Oh, flat.
Yeah.
Well, the position was one of the spices, right?
They contain levoina, yeah.
How much more
does
it? How much?
They have a koimus in each one. A koimus, a handful. Yeah, a koimus.
So they flat the position.
Yeah.
Well, then you have a problem.
So that's the question. So according to Rav Yechanan, where if you say that there was no room between the stacks of lechem aponim, and therefore they have to put them on the top lechem aponim, so where are they putting them? There's no flat space.
Well, there is a volume there. Why do you need flat?
Because you need flat. Because you need
flat.
Otherwise they're going to tilt one way or the other. The answer is makom oved lahu. Rav Yechanan would answer that the top lechem aponim in each stack was shaped a little bit differently than the others. They made in one area, and if they made a flatter area of dough, which eventually was baked into a flatter surface, that they could put the position on top of that.
They were bigger than the.
No, they would be the same size as the other one. Each one is made out of two Israelim, but they would make it. The top one would be shaped slightly differently. Fine. Next, the Shleim Elamanda almost can be Teva Krusa. I can understand, according to Rav Hanina, who says that the Lachem Aponim was shaped like an open box, Hainu Dehavu Yafi Kanin. Then that explains where the Kanin sat. Now, we're going to talk about later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about it like this. The Shulchan had, and the Torah tells us that the Shulchan had things called Ksavos and Menachios. And you have two different understandings which one is which. But for our purposes, let's go with that. The Menachias are the frames, and the Kanim are the sticks, the rods. So the idea is like this: you have frames. If you look in the diagram, if you look in the third diagram in Rashi, you can see that there's a frame standing next to each. There's a frame by each side of the shulchan. Actually, altogether, then there were four of them: two for one stack, two for the other. And you have a number of different understandings among the Rishonim how those frames were shaped. Were they basically like, one idea is they were made like, the Ravid, I think, says they were made like a straight pole with the legs at the bottom of it, and then horizontal beams sticking
like
out.
Frames,
sort of in that sense, that would be like catering frames, right? So you have five or six horizontal things sticking out. You have the Rambam draws this in Pirush HaMishnayot that each one was shaped. It was also began like a pole, but then it just forks into a V further up. Mm-hmm. You have another way of understanding it that a number of the Rishonim understand is that each of them was a solid piece and had grooves cut in it for the Kanim to fit into. Basically, it depends on how we understand the word mufutsalin. Later on in the parak, we're going to say that they were mufutsalin, and the question is what mufutsalin means. Does mufutsalin mean, again, like you have like that, like one vertical thing and a bunch of horizontal things sticking out of it? Does it mean Y-shaped? Or does it mean with holes cut out in it? Whatever. Those things are the Gemara is calling them the sniffin, the prophet calls them menachios. Then you have, for each stack of lachem upon him, there were 14 kanim, which the posset calls ksoi. We're going to learn later on that they were long, thin rods made out of gold, and they were sort of in cross section. They were U shaped, but like each one was shaped like this, sort of.
The
point of them was that they were placed between the lachem aponim to allow air to circulate between them. Otherwise, they would spoil.
They wouldn't melt.
No, they were made out of gold. Why would they not?
Because the lechem aponim was hot.
Fine. First of all, the lechem aponim is nowhere near hot enough to melt gold. gold has a fairly high melting point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, it's not like the moment they took it out of the oven, they placed it on the shulchan. In fact, we're going to discuss later on in the parak, they had to be baked before Shabbos. So by the time the nest happened and they stay hot and fresh on the lucha on the shulchan all week, but not hot enough to melt gold. Come on. Anyway, the point is that these klavos, again, they were long, thin. They were you can think of them as sort of like straws cut in half along their length. So each one is like a half of a straw. It's like a long half of a straw.
So they're like a big kibble, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they had 28 of those, 14 for each stack. And they were placed. They put three of them between each two lachem aponim, and two between the fifth and the sixth one, as we'll learn later on in the parak. And now the question is like this: if you say that the lachem aponim was communicated with krusa, so therefore it has flat surfaces on the tops of the sides, okay, and that explains where you're putting the kanim. You're putting the kanim go across like that, yeah, on the tops of the things, and they all go evenly, and on the next one, and the stack above it also fits very nicely on top of them because it's squared off. El olamanda almost commits spinner ekedes, but according to Rav Yechanan, that it was shaped like a boat, like a fast boat. And that means it tapers towards the end. Kanim, hey, Father Yasu, then where are the kanim sitting? You have, the middle is wide, but the ends are narrower. You don't really have room for the kanim to sit over there.
Well,
I mean, they could, but they could, but you're still going to have it.
Why can't you make the kanim above the groove? Was there the groove here? And you make the kanim above it.
No. So that's the point. In other words, that you have the kanim basically. I mean, there's supposed to be the kanim are making a slight separation between one lachem aponim and the next in order that they don't spoil. But most of the weight of the lachem aponim is one on top of the other, which is why in the top one you didn't eat as many kanim because there's not as much weight there. But the point is that the bottom lachem aponim rests directly on the shulchan.
Correct.
Then the next one on top, of the kanim, which are on top of the first one.
Yeah.
And the third one, no, that's the point. Now, each one, you have a lechem, you have kanim, lechem, kanim, etc., all the way up to the top. The top one didn't need as much, but it's still needed, yeah. So the point is that if you're going to say that the lachem aponim was shaped like a boat, then you don't really have a space over there for the kanim to go and be able to hold them up effectively. But perhaps also, I mean, I didn't mention before, but one understanding that Achronim have of Rashi's Shitta in the shape of the lachem aponim, according to the opinion, Spinner Ekedes, would be that it was higher in the middle and it sloped down towards the side. So not only it tapered towards the side and then became sharper towards the side, but also lowered a little bit towards the side. So then you really have a question where you're putting the pan. The answer is Mursha Oven Lahu. The answer is, according to Rabbi Yechanan, you would say they had a protrusion, they had something sticking out of the lachem aponim for the kanim. In other words, they had extra little pieces of dough sticking out in appropriate places from the lachem aponim in order for the kanim to be able to rest on those so that it has a broader base for the kanim to sit on. Tosfos, in fact, also part of Tosfos's understanding about the whole thing, that point of Rashi, it sloped up like this and then went up like this. Part of Tosfos's understanding is it had kind of like a keel running the full length of it. You can see in the picture over here. So like it's sort of rounded on the bottom, but it's like squared off with a thinner piece attached along the full length of it. So that would also be that would be this mursha, that would be the sticking out thing that we're talking about. So it's still thin like the keel of a boat, but it's more squared off, so that way there's more room. So that way, there's more room for the cannon to hold up one lachem aponim on top of the other.
Not deform it so thin at the end.
Well, for the whole thing. Apparently not. So apparently, they made it just thick enough for the purpose. I think Tosfos says. B'chlal, by the way, this is a good point to talk about the question: how thick was the lachem aponim? Now, later on in the parak, we're going to talk about something involving the lachem aponim, involving that they had kronos of seven tefachim. So Rashi explains over there that kronos means basically they have little pieces of dough that are sticking out from the corners of the lachem aponim. However, the Rambam understands that kronos of Zion over there means that the lachem aponim was actually seven ekvois thick. Seven thumb width, which actually the Ralbag actually asks on the Rambam, the Ralbag in his Pirush on Chumash, that analyzes, he says, if you look at the amount of an Isparon, and if you take an Isparon of flour and figure it out in terms of cubic esbois, you don't have enough flour over there to make a loaf of bread that's seven esbois thick in the whole.
Just up and up.
Seven boys, not spoken. He acts on the namal, on the face of it. The lachem achonim can't, on the face of it, the lachem achonim can't bid more than an ekva or two thick, otherwise you don't have enough flour. So you have the foreshim who understand that amam to mean not that the whole thing was seven boys thick, but rather that they put pieces of dough, like in the corners of something, in order to strengthen it, in order to reinforce it, and in those places it was seven boys thick. Okay. Anyway, but the rest of it though was fairly thin. So yeah. Next, the Shlomo Lamanda on the community table.
It wasn't holding on the corners. It was holding on the thin areas.
Right. Okay, so again, the Shlomo Lamanda on the community table. Okay, let's continue. If we say it's good according to the Chanina, who says Lachem Aponim was shaped like an open box, how do Samcha they sniff in the Lachem? Then that explains, okay, so the previous thing we were asking, where do you have room on top of each Lachem Aponim for the Kanim? And we're answering that you have pieces of dough sticking out in appropriate places, and you can put the Kanim on top of them. Now we have the other part of it. If you say the lachem aponim is square, then that explains how the snifim are holding up the bread. Because again, you have the bread is flat on the bottom, so therefore, three tanim going across make like a little shelf that the lachem aponim sits squarely on top of it. Erol amanda almost can spinner the kedis, but if you say that the lachem aponim was like a fat boat, so it came to a point, or it came to a point, on it was V-shaped on the bottom, and how are the sniffin holding up the bread? They're only touching it at the point where at the part where it comes to a point.
In the middle of it.
And then in other words, you have like this, and then what? They're gonna hold it
like a ship
right,
but in the middle.
Yeah, but you're not gonna hold it only in the middle. You need something to hold the sides. You need something to hold the sloping sides also, otherwise they're gonna break off.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you have it comes to a V shape on the bottom, then where how are the kanim holding it up? The answer is the ogilahu miyagol. The answer is they rounded them off. So Rashi explains that it means that they didn't have snifim, that they didn't. I said it a little bit wrongly. The question wasn't about the kanim. The kanim we dealt with in the previous one, again, we had these pieces sticking out in appropriate places, therefore the kanim have what to hold on to. Now the question was, I said it wrong. So now the question is about the sniffing. Those vertical things that are standing by the side, two for each stack of lachem aponim, one on this side, one on this side. If you say the lachem aponim is squared off, then the snifim do a good job holding the bread, because then the snifim touch the edges of the bread. So therefore they keep it from breaking.
Okay.
But if you say that the bread was shaped like a boat, then how are the snifim doing much of a job holding up the bread? The bread is only touching each loaf of lachem aponim is only touching the snifim where it at that point, where it comes to a point where it touches the snifim.
Don't you have a support underneath?
You have a support underneath, fine, but what about this whole diagonal area over here? What's supporting that? And so the answer is the Ogil Lahumiago. The answer is that you round them off. Which means, so you have a couple of different explanations. Here you have Rashi versus Tosfos. Does it mean that the kanim themselves were made with, does it mean that the kanim themselves are made with each one has a semicircular indentation in it, like that, so that it exactly holds the side of the lachem aponim? Or does it mean the diagram in Rashi seems to indicate that the snifim themselves were made almost like a zigzag? They went in and out so that the snifim themselves have a semicircular thing under sticking out at each level of lachem aponim, and then you have the kanim to take the rest of the weight. So according to that, you also have a way of making it.
Between the sniffing?
Between the, okay, so you have one sniff on this side, one sniff on this side. Right. You have the kanim going across,
right,
underneath and on top of each lechem. So according to the chanina, it's very straightforward. According to Rabbi Yechanan, you either have to say that the sniffing themselves were made thicker, they were made not like a half a straw, like we were saying before, but rather that they were made with something like this, so that they could hold up the sides of the lachem aponim. Or you would say the sniffing themselves were made something like a zigzag, so that they go in and out, and that way on each level you have something going in like this to hold up part of the lachem aponim. So far we have three questions on Spinner the Kedis, and we found ways to answer all of them. Now the other way around. B'shleim elam ander amukim in spinner de kevis. I can understand if we say that the lachem aponim was shaped like a boat. I need to be in and sniff him. And that explains why you need to sniff him in the first place. Because again, you have that in that case, the timing by themselves are not going to do an effective job holding up the bread because it's shaped unusually like that. And therefore it's going to fall over. Elam ander amukim. But if you say like Rabbi Yochanan, that the bread is anyway square shaped, sniff and lovely. What do I need sniffing on the sides for? You just have the kanim, one bread on top of the other, with the kanim in between them. What else do you need? Why do you need the sniffing? Why do you need the sniffing for? What are the sniffing accomplishing? The side frame.
How's the kanim going to hold?
They won't. The kanim, in fact, especially according to the Rambam, you have actually, I mentioned before about sniffing, you have a machloikas, how the sniffing will shape. According to the Rambam, the kanim b'chlal weren't held by the snifim at all. The kanim are only held in place by you have one lechem aponim kanim, another lechem aponim kanim, etc. You don't have the ends of them. Do not go into anything on the snifim.
Of course, you move them.
You're not moving them. You're leaving them there. The weight of the bread is
a file.
Yeah. No, but unless you have an earthquake or something, it's gonna stay in place. But the question is, according to that, why do you need the sniffing? The answer is, agav yukra de lechem tolach. The answer is, okay, but the bread is so heavy that if you don't have something on the side to keep it in bounds, then it's going to break. The ends of it, like this you have, according to the chanina, the ends of it are standing up like this. So if you don't have something on this side and on this side to hold it in place, then it's gonna bow out, it's gonna break. So therefore, you need, there's a sniffing that's true, especially according to that.
Like knives, basically.
I guess there's that too, yeah. But even without that, the point is that the sides of the bread are going to collapse if you don't have something to keep them in place, and that's the job of the sniff. Okay.
Our kanim wasn't helping.
So therefore, right, so the kanim help, all the kanim do, in other words, is they're allowing air to circulate between one lachem aponim and the next. But they're holding the weight, but they're not preventing the sides of the lachem aponim from breaking. Therefore, you need to sniff him to hold the sides of the lachem aponim. So agav yukra is a lachem because of the heaviness of the bread, tolach it would break into pieces. So yeah. Okay. Next. The shleim elamander amakim in sinere kedesh. Okay. Now let's go back to again according to Rabbi Yochanan, back the lachem aponim is shaped like a boat. Then we understand. Then we understand the sniffing themselves don't have to be, then the sniffing themselves do not have to be resting on the ground. They can be resting on the surface of the shulchan. You have, in other words, the shulchan itself has a table. It has four legs. You have the surface of the shulchan, and on the surface you have the four sniffing, one here, one here, one here, one here, and they go up from there until the height of the lechem aponim, and they're holding. So that works out well. Elul mander omak min keva prusa, but according to the opinion of Rav Chanina, that the lachem aponim was shaped like an open box. Sniffin hechamanachlu. Then the question is, where are you putting the sniffin? On the face of it, you're not going to be able to put the sniffin on the shulchan. They're not going to be able to, the lachem aponim fills up the whole width of the shulchan. So there's no room on top of the shulchan. If you say it's sinner de kedes, the point is that the top surface of them is the top surface of them. Remember, they come to a point on the top. Only there is it the full width of the shulchan. So you have room to put sniffing on top of the shulchan and stand in various areas. And the sniffing, you have holes cut out or whatever in order for the ends of the lachem aponim to stick out of it. But if you say it's kamin teva prusa, each lachem aponim, the sides of it are solid. Then they fill up the exact width of the shulchan. Then there's no room on the shulchan for sniffing. So what do you say? Where do you put them?
You're saying the shulchan's width is exactly the
yeah, that's what we're going to of the lachem aponim. We're going to discuss later on in the parrot. But the lachem aponim, they made them a certain size and then they folded up the sides of it. So if you say it was square, then that means the whole bottom of the lachem aponim and the sides fills up the entire width of the shulchan. So then there's no room to sniff them on top of the shulchan. Whereas if you say that it's shaped like a boat, and fine, it only comes to the full width of the shulchan at the top, so there's room enough for sniffing.
Where?
Because you start, let's say you put a sniff over here, then at the point where the lakamapanim becomes forward, then fine, you have the sniff over there is a little bit narrower over there, you cut out a hole in it if you have to or whatever to make the edge of the lakamapanim stick out through it or whatever, and then it continues up. But you have it. You can make it work. No, it's not.
Also make it
no, because then they have the entire height of it. It's flat. There's no space between one and the next. You only have the tiny little space that you have the cannon in, and there's not enough space there to make a sniff that's going to hold anything.
By this shape, the edge is going out on the
only place. when you get up to the top edge, do you have the full rib for the shulchan.
Yeah.
But therefore, you have room enough up to that point to have a sniff. And even above that, if you have a hole cut out over there, you have the sniff. And now the sniff, let's say, starts out wide over here, and it narrows as you go over here, and then it widens out again and narrows and so forth and goes like that, like a zigzag all the way up. Fine. So, but at least there's room for it on the shulchan, because most of the height of the lechem aponim is not the full width of the shulchan. But if you say that it's kumin teva, the full width of each lechem aponim is the full width of the shulchan. There's no space between one and the next. So where are you putting the sniff in? The answer is
over the
ara. You're putting them on the ground next to the shulchan. Yeah. And in fact, the ara manachlohu. So that's the question. Actually, that's part of the question. Hey, manachlohu, where are you supposed to put them? Ara manachlohu. Are you supposed to put the sniff in on the ground? And the answer is in. Yes, as a matter of fact. The Amr of Abba Memel, the Divrei Ha'oma Kamin Spinner Rekeh, that's according to the opinion of Rabbi Yechanan, that the Lachan Afanin was part of the Shulchan, same way as the legs of the Shulchan. According to the opinion that Kamin Spinner Rekeh, sniffing Agaba Shulchan Munachin, then according to that, the sniffing lie on top of the table and go up from there, the Divrei Ha'oma Kamin Teva Krutta, according to the Rabbi Hanina, that they're flat, that they're box shaped. Sniffing, I got the cow from enough, and then the sniffing begin on the ground and go up together with the height of the shulchan, and then this is the way they're usually drawn. Whenever you see pictures of the shulchan in the Beit Mikdash, the chlal, like I said, as kids we always learn the one way. We learn the chaninah way, that's min teva prutza. Unless a person learns this gemara, they're never even going to find out the concept of min spinner they can. So yeah, it's always drawn that way, that the sniffing begin on the ground and go up to the height of the shulchan. So that's based on this, yeah.
Okay.
It's a shape shaped like a boat, and you don't need that. Then they can start on top of the shulchan, on the surface of the shulchan, and go up from there. Okay.
Well, the second layer, and when they go up, they have to stay under the...
No, but again, you have it starts out, the sniff starts out wide, right, and narrows as it gets up
okay.
there, and then it widens out again.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Okay, which of these two opinions does the following bride to go according to, that Yehuda says, Halachem mamid is a sniffin, v'asniffin mamid is a lechem. The lechem aponim helps hold the sniffin in place, and the sniffin helps hold the lechem aponim in place. That would be, commander Amokim, spinner ekedis. That would only be, according to the opinion, that the lechem aponim is shaped like a boat. So therefore you have, in other words, the diagonal surface, the broadening surface of the lechem is sitting on top of the sniff, and therefore, in other words, it helps hold the sniff in place because the sniff is sort of attached to the lechem over there.
It goes
like this, yeah. So therefore, like each lechem upon him is holding this, is holding,
corrugated.
Yeah, it's kind of like corrugated, exactly. So therefore, it helps hold that part of the sniff in place, and in turn, the sniff helps hold the lechem upon him that is going to fall over. That explanation, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, wouldn't work out according to the Chaninik, Minteva Prusa, because then you don't need, then the lechem is not really holding the sniffing in place. Then it's only the sniffing or holding the lechem to keep it from bowing out and breaking. The lechem is not really holding the sniffing in place because they're being held in place because they're lying on the, because they're standing on, so they're standing on the ground. Yeah. Okay. Sigmar says, Macy, I have a contradiction to the idea that the lechem upon him, that the lechem upon him was like a ship. Because the Braita says, there was something like a beehive shaped thing for the lechem aponim inside the oven. The doma kimin tavla merubah. It looked like a square table, like a square panel. Kaveres means like a beehive shape, which is actually round. exactly what Tosfos says is. What we mean kaveres over here is the same way as a beehive or beehive-shaped basket has holes in it, the same way this thing inside the oven, as I said before, has holes in it in order that the fire of the oven should be able to bake the bread. Otherwise, if the thing is completely closed in on all sides, then you don't really have baking. Then the process of putting it in the oven and then heating it up can't really be called baking. It's more like cooking. In fact, by the way, now that we're talking about that, there's an interesting tshuva from the Tzemach Tzedek about the question when people make cakes. The Tzemach Tzedek example is when people make lechach. Usually, people don't separate challah from the batter for it. Why not? On the face of it, they should have to. They bake in an oven, after all. And the Tzemach Tzedek describes because on the face of it, you should have to take challah from batter that you make lechach or other cakes out of. And one thing, some ascetic.
To do with being basic.
No, because the point is, some ascetic discusses on partly on the basis of our Gemara that if you're putting it in a pan in the oven, then it's not quite the same thing as baking as when you bake something in the oven without it being inside a cake pan.
Mm-hmm.
When it's inside a cake pan, you can't really call it the same thing as baking. That leads to our Gemara over here only because the thing has holes in it. Can it be considered that you're baking? Otherwise, what you have at the end is not really considered luxury.
It has to be in a pan to be
you have to consider, how do they normally bake bread in Gemara times? You put the dough directly on the wall of the oven.
Yeah.
Okay, nowadays we don't do that. We do put it on a baking sheet, but still, you have it on a baking sheet, you have it on the bottom of it, but you have it on all other sides exposed to the heat of the oven. And of course, matzahs are baked directly on the floor of the oven, so that can be considered bread. But there's some ascetic rice over there. If you have, you put a cake, for example, inside a 9x13 pan or whatever, where it's shielded from the direct effects of the fire on the sides or by the walls of the pan. Also, maybe that's not really considered baking, and that would be a reason maybe why people don't take challah from such things. Anyway, the point is here, in order for it to be considered bread, and it is lechem afanim after all, they were saying it has to have holes in it. Otherwise, it would be the equivalent of some ascetic lechem. Anyway, the point is, getting back to the Gemara, that we see that it's described the Dovitim Tavla Mirubas. It's like a square sheet, like a square panel. So we see from that the Lachem Aponim is square shaped. So that would be like Rav Hanina, not like Rav Yechonon. The answer is Amo Pia Dovitim Tavla Mirubas. Okay, you could answer. The answer is that the opening of it was made square, but the bottom of it was made square. But the bottom of it was more V-shaped. The top was more square off, and the bottom would have been maybe the bottom. The Braita is not saying, but the bottom could have been more like the keel of a ship. Yeah.
So it was a combination of both.
No, in other words, the point is, when Rav Yechonon said Kamin Tzvinir Ekedet, he never said exactly what the top is shaped like, so we can understand that the top is a little more squared off, but the bottom of it could be coming to a point. Okay. Tanya Commander Omer Kamin Tzvinir Ekedet, we learn another Braita like the opinion that says that it was Tzvinir Ekedet, the Tanya, namely we learn in a Braita, our boss Sniffin Shalzov Hayusham. There were four snifim, the four side pieces made out of gold over there by the shofan. Mufutsolin merashehen kamin dukronin hayu. They were mufutsolin, which that's the question, what mufutsolin means. They were mufutsolin near their top, like dukronin, like reeds, like a thicket of reeds that grow together, where you have a store off as one thing on bottom, and then they branch out into many reeds on top. So these were like that also. And again, what that means, that's where you have all the different understandings of the Rishonim. This is where, for example, the Rambam gets the idea that it was Y-shaped. Because again, if you have Mufutsolim and Rishonim, Kamitkonim to Kronim, that's exactly how they grow. They start off as one on the bottom, and they branch out, and then they branch out on top. So therefore it would come out Y-shaped. According to the Raivad, similarly, it would be like you have, that's why you have these horizontal pieces along the height of it. Because again, that would be another way of understanding Mufutsolim, coming common to crying, like at each level it branches out into a couple of branches. And the ones who say that each one was a solid slab with holes in it, they would understand what was solid menoshe, and that what was solid can also mean with holes in it. Sort of like you have in this week's parasha, we have Yaakov Avinu says he peels off the bark and sticks and puts them in front of his flocks over there, Makalak, Velud, Nevelud, Ba'amin, Ba'ifasol, Ba'hen, Salah. And there it means, like, he's peeling off the different parts of the bark to make, like, holes, to make, like, a pattern over there. So therefore, Mufasolim can also mean, like, it has holes, like a pattern of holes. Okay, so anyway, so those are the different possibilities. Shatsenken behenef alechem, they would use those to hold up the sides of the bread. True joimus, and then spinner a kevis, because it's like a fast chip. So there we go, the braisa clearly says it was like a fast chip.
So what is it?
So therefore, so that braisa clearly goes according to the vision. With that said, though, the Rambam paskin like a chamina, from the table krupa, which is why we always learn it that way as kids. So why, and Rashi also, and Chumash also learns that way. So taka why, if we have a bright like a Yishanan, why should we be passing like a Chanina? So the our mission didn't say one way or the other. So the Kesef Mishnah gives one answer that maybe the reason is because Rav Chanina is Rav Yechanan's Rebbe. He's older than him, he's Rebbe. Therefore, that might be a reason to pass him like him. Another reason the Lacha Mishnah also talks about is because the Gemara started by asking a few questions on Rav Chanina about how it works, how he put the kanim, how he put the kanim, what the snifim are accomplishing, etc. And the Gemara answered each one of them, but the Rambam may have felt that those answers are a bit of a dosa. That you add extra pieces of dough here or there to hold up the canning, or that you have that the snifim are shaped like a zigzag or whatever it might have been. The Rambam might have felt that's too much of a dough. It's more straightforward to understand according to the opinion commentator Klosa. With that said, most of the Rishonim and Achronim understand that it doesn't have to mean that you must make it that way, and if you make it any other way, it would be possible. Yeah, they talk about that maybe it would actually be acceptable either way. Just they're talking. Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Chanina might not really be arguing what the actual din is, but rather practically speaking, what do they do? But the Ikar din, they talk about as long as it has. The Gemara mentions later on that it has to be lachem afonim, lachem shayesh lofonim, that it has to be bread that has many surfaces to it. So no matter how, as long as you make it, that it has many surfaces, then you could argue that it would be kosher.
Ponim
implies round. Ponim doesn't imply round necessarily. Ponim implies spaces, surfaces. In fact, by the way, I mean, to finish off, the Rabag, I mentioned that the Rabag argues with the Rambam about the thickness of the lachem upon him. He also has a unique shitta about the shape of the sides. He learned that the sides were not exactly squared off, like we were saying in Korn Shem Chanina, not rounded like Rabbi Yechanan, but rather he learned that each side was sort of like half of an octagon. So as if you took a stop sign and cut it in half, and one of them was one side and one of them was the other side. That's how he learns. And that way he says, that way yesh like punim habe. It has many more surfaces than a regular loaf of bread that would just be flat would have. See?
So it was tilted, basically?
Not tilted. So he would learn, in other words, the bottom was flat, like the punim is saying. The sides were at 90-degree angles, say,
right.
Also like a punim is saying.
Right.
But the top of each one, instead of being squared off like this, was shaped like this. Each top corner of the two sides was cut off at a 45 degree angle like this. So like this. Yeah. So
like a diamond.
Not like a diamond per se, but like I said, like half of a stop sign. And that would be
stop
yeah.
Sign, right.
Yeah, like that.
Right.
Okay. Fine.